VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Recently, President Biden has done an end around his constitutional authority to mandate that all employers with more than 100 employees receive the COVID shot. He's also pushing a third shot booster, and discussions have been held of whether or not boosters should be needed every 5 to 8 months. Soon, this COVID shot will be released and mandated for children. Absent from the president's remarks, of course, were the many large numbers of adverse effects experienced by those who have received the shot. Every effort to promote alternatives has been shot down by the Biden administration. They've been shot down by social media platforms and have been mocked by the media. Well, with more on this and other issues, we welcome Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. He is a board-certified family physician with over 20 years' experience. He has published in top peer-reviewed journals with world-renowned physicians. He's the first in the world to develop therapeutics against COVID. He's a doctor who recommended President Trump take hydroxychloroquine. He's provided counsel to White House personnel, multiple governments, hospitals, physicians, and public figures. He's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize and has been recognized a hero at a Department of Homeland Security committee hearing. Dr. Zelenko, thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Doctor, increasing pressure is being placed on the United States population right now to receive this COVID shot. The president's forcing businesses to force this on their employees. We keep hearing the words safe and effective. Could you comment on those words? Is this COVID shot that's being mandated safe and effective?
This COVID shot is a weapon of eugenics, a weapon of mass murder, and global genocide.
Define that more thoroughly for us, if you would. How is it doing that?
When you look at any therapeutic, make a risk versus benefit analysis whether or not we want to use it, we look at three factors. One is medical necessity. Do we need it? Just because we have something doesn't mean we necessarily need to use it. Is it effective? Its efficacy? Does it work? And is it safe? So I think we need to do that very thorough analysis on these so-called vaccines, and then we can come to a very rational conclusion. Mm-hmm. So with your permission, I'd like to start that analysis.
Please do.
Fine. But let's look at medical necessity. Meaning, do we need to do it? You know, a surgeon that operates on everyone comes through his office is not a surgeon, he's a butcher. A good doctor knows when not to cut. So just because we have a tool, when do we use it? Is it necessary? That's an important question. So if we look at the demographics of 18 or younger healthy kids, according to the CDC, the survival rate from COVID-19 with no treatment is 99.998%. It's a near 100% with no treatment. It's a very simple statement, I could say, that there's no medical need to immunize a demographic that has a near 100% recovery rate from an infection without treatment, so that basically it means it's safer than the flu. Now, if we look at the second demographic from 18 to 45 and healthy adults, then the survival rate is 99.95% with no treatment. With treatments, a near 100%. So it's the same exact argument. You have something that is near 100% treatable and survivable without any major intervention. Then the next demographic is people that have had COVID already and have natural immunity. It's been established even recently, just a month ago, multiple papers coming out proving that naturally induced immunity, your body, your God-given immune system, produces antibodies that are much more robust and better for you and effective in preventing future COVID infections than any vaccine could ever do. So my argument would be that in that population, they also don't need the vaccine because they already have good. Why would I give someone inferior antibodies to a shot when they have already superior antibodies? The last demographic, which is the one that we need to really focus on, is the high-risk group, meaning 45 years or older, or those with medical problems, or, in my opinion, those that got vaccinated. I'll get back to that statement. The death rate worldwide is 7.5%. That's unacceptable. And just to give you a sense of scale, so you should understand, if every single human being on the planet got COVID and was not treated, the death rate overall, all comers, would be 0.5%. That works out to be 35 million people. Hmm. Horrific. I would never advocate for that. And obviously, those 35 million deaths would be from the high-risk group, not the low-risk group. Now, if we treat those people properly with antiviral drugs at the right time frame, my data, which was the first, but then corroborated by dozens of peer-reviewed studies, show that there's an 85% reduction on average in hospitalization and death if you treat people properly. So out of 600,000 dead Americans, let's say, we could have prevented 510,000 from even going to the hospital. So if you take those 35 million global deaths, if you assume every single person on the planet gets COVID and you treat them properly, you reduce the death rate to around 5 million dead people worldwide, assuming that every single human being got COVID. Now, and then you can ask a real good question. So with something that now has a 1% death rate in the high-risk patient, maybe a vaccine would be helpful because you could maybe have better outcomes with the vaccine. So that's a good question, and I think we should analyze that. So does this vaccine work? Well, let's look at the three most immunized countries in the world: Israel, Gibraltar, and Seychelles, which is an island nation in the Indian Ocean. All of them have vaccination rates over 85%. All of them are experiencing massive outbreaks of Delta variant. And according to Dr. Wozniak, I don't know if I said her name right, but she's the director of the CDC, she recently said that people that were immunized in Israel, she analyzed the Israeli data, and people that were immunized in Israel are now getting much sicker and ending up in the ICU much more often than the unvaccinated. And her conclusion from that was you should take another shot. So, go ahead.
I was going to mention, I mean, you are an Orthodox Jew, and as you mentioned, Israel really has been leading the world with these shots and looking at a four-shot. And I saw the video call that you had to Israeli officials, and you took them to task as to what they were doing. In just a brief summary, since we're on this topic of Israel, just share briefly what you told those Israeli officials and how have they responded to what you told them?
Subsequently, they actually recommended against childhood vaccination and against vaccination in people that have antibodies. So I thought that was relatively successful from one talk to them, mm-hmm. that they were able to at least save the children. And what I said to them was I gave them a very clear analysis. It's actually what I'm telling you. I didn't finish my analysis, but I gave them the facts and then let them deliberate between the different narratives out there and let's see if they can come to the truth. And that's what I'm saying to your audience as well. Don't believe a word that I'm saying. Maybe listen to what I'm saying, write down what I'm saying, and then do your due diligence. Go study up. Do your research. See if I'm telling you the truth. Don't make the same mistake that you did with the government with me. Mm-hmm. I like to bring a counter-narrative. I like to bring for you another perspective, which I believe to be true. And then you have free choice and you have consciousness, and then do your due diligence and make a decision based on being informed. And what I'm saying is the exact opposite, that the truth is being suppressed and only falsehoods are being pumped out there, and that's leading people to make huge mistakes because of the lack of accurate information.
Sure. Now, I interrupted you with your analysis, so go ahead and continue on there.
So up to this point, I've showed you that the majority of people, this vaccine is not necessary even for, and in those small high-risk subset, we're trying to figure out if the risk-versus-benefit analysis would favor treating. And I'm showing you that in the three most immunized countries in the world, they're having huge outbreaks and actually seeing worse outcomes in the vaccinated population. And we even know why. Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the vaccine, he said that the CDC is reporting higher viral load levels in vaccinated patients compared to unvaccinated. In other words, when someone gets sick and they had already the vaccine, they have much more of that virus counterintuitive, but that's what they're saying, so they get much more sick. So I believe it, not only doesn't it work, it potentially harms in terms of actual viral infection. Now let's get to the really disturbing part of the analysis, which is the safety concerns. I started this interview telling you that this is a weapon of eugenics and genocide and mass murder. I forgot to mention also that there's a patent that was just filed, and I'll give you the number later, but August 31st, just a few weeks ago, and the patent was for technology that's already in the vaccines that could be used to track location and measure internal physiological parameters like temperature and heart rate and other factors as well. So in these, and this is a patent already filed and approved. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's very well a conspiracy. It's just not a theory anymore, because and the patent walks you through the exact details of how this technology works. So I think that's important for people to know. But let's start with safety. What is the threshold of death that we would accept, beyond which we would say this vaccine is not worth it? No one seems to want to answer this question. But just to give you a sense of scale, in 1976, with the swine flu vaccine, 26 people died. The entire program was scrubbed. We're up to, and this is government. The government admits to, over 14,000 deaths on the VAERS system. This is government data. It's not conjecture. It's what the government actually admits to. There's a CDC whistleblower that filed an affidavit that said the actual number is not bad, but it's closer to 45,000. So did we pass the threshold of death yet or not? I'm telling you that there's a Harvard study from 2009 on VAERS said only 1% of adverse events are actually reported. Granted, death would be reported at a much higher rate, but it's not 100%. So what is that rate? My point being is that out of the 45,000 real deaths, I suspect that that's a small fraction of what actually is being reported.
Yeah.
And there's many experts that agree with me. Not to mention that there's problems filing reports. I have colleagues that lost patients to the vaccine, and their system won't accept their reports. And not to mention the fact that there were reports filed that have now scrubbed off the system. We have screenshots with report numbers now that don't even exist on VAERS. Senator Ron Johnson is looking into that.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, our guest here today in Crosstalk, we're up against a break here, a one-minute break. And folks, through September 9th, what he is saying is actual at openvaers.com. Over 675,000 adverse reactions, 14,506 deaths, over 58,000 hospitalizations. It's also over 7,900 Bell's palsies, over 1,700 miscarriages, over 6,400 heart attacks, over 18,400 that have been permanently disabled from obtaining the shot. Folks, we'll have more to talk on this issue here. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, our guest, will be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, whatever happened to Halley's Comet?
Chris, Halley's Comet is what astronomers refer to as a short-term comet. It makes an orbit around the sun every 76 years. People saw it in the early 1900s and then again in the 80s. Astronomers can keep track of it through telescopes, and they've noticed it has decreased in size. Every trip around the sun causes the comet to disintegrate, with the tail of the comet being stripped away. Halley's Comet can't make very many trips around the sun without being totally destroyed. Thus, it couldn't be millions and millions of years old. It's a short-period comet. But there are a lot of short-period comets in the solar system. The solar system can't be billions of years old with all these youthful features in it. Chris, everything fits the recent creation idea that we're taught when we go back to Genesis.
For more information, you can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko is with us here today on the broadcast. We're going to be getting into his treatment of President Trump and others. But certainly we're talking about the COVID shot versus alternative treatment. He has called this a mass genocide, the COVID shot. He's called it eugenics, at work, mass murder here. Dr. Zelenko, we were kind of interrupted by the break, but I'm understanding you've got even more in your analysis that our listeners need to know.
Yeah, so let's go through the safety concerns, which are very significant. And I'll divide it over time because each time period has different concerns. So from the moment of injection until around approximately 3 months after injection, people are dying from blood clots. And we know exactly why that's happening. The Salk Institute in San Diego published a paper 3 months ago explaining exactly the mechanism, which is that the second that you get injected with the vaccine, your body produces trillions, tens of trillions of spike proteins, and then migrate to your endothelium, which is the inner lining of your blood vessels, the inner skin of the blood vessels, which is supposed to be smooth simply because you have blood cells flowing through that area. And instead of being smooth, they become saturated with thorns, microscopic thorns. And that's what the spike protein is. And as the blood vessels flow past these thorns, a percentage of them get damaged and lead to clots. Now, if that happens in the heart, it's a heart attack. Happens in the brain, it's a stroke. And that is what we're seeing, that for the first 3 months, the majority of people have died from these blood clots, 40% of which happened within the first 3 days of the actual shot. So that's pretty concerning. And then there's a concern with something called myocarditis or heart inflammation, which has a death rate of more than 50% over 5 years, and the youth are getting this at an incredibly high rate. So it seems to damage the hearts of young people, but that's not good. And then there's a preliminary data that is hinting upon an increase in miscarriages by a factor of 8 if a woman in the first trimester gets vaccinated. Well, that's really concerning also. And that's just in the first 3 months. If you look at the longer-term concerns, there's evidence that these mRNA vaccines actually cause cancer. And we know even why. A 2018 Sloan Kettering paper showed that mRNA suppresses tumor suppressor genes. In other words, we have genes that prevent cancer, and the mRNA seems to mess with them. And so the break off cancer is taken off. So, and we're seeing weird cancers in young people. And also the increase in autoimmune diseases. Now, that's going to affect lifespan. I can't predict by how much, but having chronic illness doesn't help your lifespan. One of the most concerning other concerns, issues, is that there was a leaked study from Japan, a Pfizer study, which was not meant to be in the public, but it was leaked. It was called the biodistribution study. The lie that Pfizer tells you is that the vaccine stays in your arm wherever you get the injection. The biodistribution study was actually used to measure, actually, does it go to other places in the body? And it actually travels to every organ system. And do you know which organ system it goes into the most? The ovaries. This vaccine collects the majority of which in the ovaries of women. So what is that going to mean to fertility over time? That hasn't been evaluated. So that's a problem. And now everything I just said pales into comparison to what I'm about to tell you. World experts like Dr. Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize in Medicine for discovering HIV, he's a big boy, is screaming that this is the biggest risk of genocide in the history of humanity. Dr. Robert Malone, who invented this vaccine, is telling people, don't take it. The government is lying to you. Dr. Michael Yeadon, who was vice president of Pfizer and the head of their vaccine development program, said it's like this. And this he told me directly because I confronted him. I spoke to him. He said that for every one child that dies naturally of COVID, 100 will die from the vaccine.
Oh, my.
It's 100-to-1 kill ratio. So let me ask you a question just as a side point. How do we define And I'm not joking. How do we define child sacrifice? I think everyone would agree that if I cut a throat of a child and let it bleed out, that's a sacrifice. Or I throw a child into a volcano or off a cliff. What is the difference if I take a healthy child that has no risk from a virus, has a near 100% chance of recovery with no treatment, and I inject into them a liquid that has a 100-to-1 kill ratio compared to that, the risk of death compared to that getting the actual virus? Wouldn't that be classified as child sacrifice?
My.
And there was one more. Oh, yeah, Dr. Dolores Cahill from Ireland, one of the top immunologists in Ireland, said that she believes within 2 years, 90% of the immunized will be dead. Now, that may be a very extreme statement. So let's say she's wrong. Let's say it's not 2 years, it's 3 years, and it's only 10% or 5%. We're talking about 7 billion people potentially vaccinated, according to the wishes of Bill Gates. And we're looking at death rates between 350 to 700 million people, which is consistent with what Bill Gates has been saying, that in 2015, in a TED lecture, mm-hmm. matter of public record, Bill Gates said that the world population needs to be reduced by 10 to 15% because of global warming. And so if you do the calculation, what is 10% of 7 billion? That's 700 million people. So, and that's assuming that it's only a 10% mortality rate from this vaccine. Remember, if every single human being got COVID and was treated properly, the world would have 5 million deaths. Compare that to the potential of what I'm describing to you of billions of dead.
Yeah.
So what I just done is I went through I forgot to even mention the mechanism. The problem is that the vaccines create antibodies that are deadly. In the 1960s, there was the RSV vaccine that was given to children and killed the children it was given to. And they realized that it was the antibodies that were produced by the vaccine when they came into contact with the RSV virus at some future date. It killed the child. It was an overreaction of the immune system. In the 70s, the same thing happened with the dengue fever virus vaccine, killed the adults. And historically, all attempts to make a COVID-19, a coronavirus vaccine, have demonstrated in animal models this antibody-dependent enhancement death. So my simple question would be, wouldn't it be a good idea to exclude this potential side effect from human beings before you deploy this vaccine on a global scale?
Shocking, folks. Shocking information. Doctor, I understand that hydroxychloroquine or HCQ actually became a household word because of you. How did you come to a treatment using HCQ?
COVID chose me, not the other way around. I'm a primary care doctor, family physician, upstate New York community for 20 years, and that community was one of the first in America hit with COVID outbreak. And there were 35,000 people living within a square mile, very high population density, so it spread through the community. So within a week, we had thousands of sick patients. Now, this is first week of March of 2020, and if you remember, there was no treatment back then. It was only send people to a home with Tylenol and then send them to the hospital, put them on a ventilator, and 80% would die. So my orientation is to keep people out of the hospital. I'm an outpatient doctor, a primary care doctor whose main role is to prevent illness and to mitigate illness so that people don't progress to needing to go to the hospital. That was always my predisposition. So, and that's what we always do with every other illness, right? Someone has cancer, we treat it right away. We don't wait for it to be metastatic. Someone has a small infection, we try to put out the fire right away. We don't wait for it to spread to the whole body. Except when it came to COVID-19, you know, even today, if you look at the NIH recommendations today, they'll tell you not to treat COVID unless you're in the hospital with oxygen level less than 92. This is after 19 months of multiple dozens of peer-reviewed studies that have shown an 85% decrease in mortality and hospitalization if you treat people in the right time frame. So what I'm trying to say is that's a policy of a government that wants you to die. It's not a policy of a government that is looking out for your best interests. So, but back then, there was really no treatment. And so from my own experience of having cancer and having such a rare form of cancer that there was no treatment, and I had to innovate my own treatment. And so I learned that if there's no answer, you have to find an answer. So it's a terrible feeling to have your patients you've taken care of for two decades look at you in desperation, looking for help, and you have nothing to offer them. So it was really like 2 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. I was praying to God. And an idea was given to me to watch a certain lecture series to brush up on my virology and to understand the pandemic better. And it's called MedCram. And you can Google it or YouTube it, MedCram episode 34. That's the one I ended up watching that night. And in that lecture, the physician explained the mechanism of hydroxychloroquine and zinc and its role of, in theory, of taking care of viral infections. And he explained that the zinc is what actually stops the enzyme that's involved in making copies of the genetic material of the virus. The virus needs to make copies of its genes in order to make more virus. And you shut that down, you shut down the ability of the virus to spread. And zinc apparently did that. It's a good bullet. However, due to biochemical reasons, zinc could not get into the cell. And so it's not very helpful. Unless you have another compound that helps zinc get into the cell, you call it a zinc delivery system or a zinc gun or a zinc ionophore, that's a medical term. And one of those was hydroxychloroquine. So in this context, it's a gun and a bullet analogy where the zinc is the bullet and the hydroxychloroquine delivers the zinc into the cell, which then can block the enzyme and stop viral replication. Now, this was theoretical. I said to myself, wow, that's a really interesting idea. And I started looking at what other countries did, and it came out that in South Korea, they were using hydroxychloroquine and zinc, but in hospitalized patients, people that were very sick. Not the best outcomes, for sure. And then I looked at the Dr. Didier Raoul in Marseille, France, and he was using hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, the antibiotic, in very sick patients with some mild success. And so I thought to myself, one second, why should we just treat the very sick patients? Let's treat people in the beginning of the illness because it's most likely you're going to get a better outcome. And so there was another problem that I had to deal with, which was knowing who to treat.
Tell you what, let's pick up with that. We're up against a one-minute break, and that is who to treat. And we're talking with Dr. Vladimir Zelenko on Crosstalk today. And, we're talking about the COVID shot versus alternative treatment. So who to treat? You stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We'll be back in just a minute.
King Lemuel wrote, "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies." The passage from Proverbs 31, words written by this king as taught to him by his mother. King Lemuel's mother understood many of the struggles and temptations that men face. She also knew that there were virtuous women and those that lacked these important qualities. In the book, The Words of King Lemuel, author James Daughtry unlocks the secrets of this ancient proverb. He transports you back to the times and setting of the passage to uncover the important truths concerning the virtuous woman. The Words of King Lemuel, great for personal or group Bible study. One copy of the book is available for a donation of $11, 5 copies for a donation of $40, or 10 copies for $69 when you call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko with us here today on Crosstalk. We're talking about the COVID shot versus alternative treatment, of which he, in the middle of the night, prayed out to God and was led to watch this MedCram episode number 34 and working through the details on this. And then we're at the point of our discussion right now as to who do we go about treating? We saw those who treated those who were just very ill in the hospital and others trying different methods here. But Dr. Zelenko, you were faced with that. You have patients and began wondering who do we treat with that that combination of zinc and hydroxychloroquine. Pick it up from there.
Well, you may ask, why not treat everyone? And let me paint you a picture, okay? This is a very accurate picture. My practice used to see on a regular day 50 patients. Now we had 250 patients a day. There was half my staff was sick from COVID. The hospitals were near full capacity. And the outpatient laboratory was closed and outpatient radiology was closed. So we're talking about a mass casualty event with no resources. And I needed to make triage decisions. I became a frontline battlefield doctor in a week because that's what the situation changed into. And there was no way that I can get to every patient. So I had a pretty clever idea. I called up a few of my colleagues at the ICU, intensive care units, and I asked them a simple question, which patients are dying? And they told me, well, it's the elderly and those with medical problems. I said, what about the younger people? We're not seeing them. That's all I needed to know. So then I came back to my office. I created quick criteria, which I've subsequently modified. But basically my criteria were if you're 65 or older, I'm going to treat you. If you have any medical problems on a chronic basis, I'm going to treat you. And if you look like you're dying, I'm going to treat you. Everyone else go home. Obviously with follow-up, and if things get better or worse, you should notify me. So now I had my basically two-thirds of patients I sent home. And now I have a more manageable group. And I started deploying treatments on them. And here's another very important point of my protocol. I did not wait for the results of PCR testing. And the reason why, at that time, it took 7 days to get the results. If I would wait 7 days to get the results for something, that patient would be half dead already. Timing was important. So I just used clinical decision-making and common sense. Look, we could check for the flu and at the office. There was no flu around. Everyone had the same symptoms of fever, loss of smell or taste, body aches, diarrhea. And the first batch of testing that I got back, 9 out of 14 patients were positive for COVID. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that if someone comes in with a flu-like syndrome and the testing is already showing you more than 50% are positive, there's no flu around. This patient has COVID until proven otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I wait to treat them? So there were three kind of nuances that I basically specialize in common sense. And it's pretty pathetic that in this generation, common sense is considered genius. But it's not such a brilliant idea to treat people in the right time frame. I mean, it's just in triage. These are normal principles in life, except that people have lost their minds. So I identified high-risk patients. I treated them without even knowing the results of the PCR test, and I treated them with a three-drug cocktail that revolved around zinc as the main point. And I also used the antibiotic azithromycin. It turns out that it had a very important effect as well. So, and I saw in the first, you know, dozen patients or so that people started getting better within 6 to 12 hours. And I said, I didn't even believe it myself. I'm like, okay, that's a fluke. But I kept on doing it, and I kept on seeing the same pattern. And after 50 patients or so, I realized what I potentially have just stumbled across with God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially the most important piece of information in the history of information. Keep in mind, there's a global pandemic. There's no known treatment. The economies are in shutdown mode. Everyone is living in fear. And because of telecommunication and social media, everyone knows everything. I mean, it was a global disaster. And I felt like I found the enemy map with important information that I needed to get to the five-star general right away. So how do you do that? So with the help of my son, I made a YouTube video addressed to the President of the United States asking for help. 16 hours later, I get a phone call. On my cell, I get a call from Mark Meadows, President's Chief of Staff. I wouldn't believe the story except that it happened to me. But he calls me and he says, Dr. Zelenko, how can we help you? I said, actually, I think I can help you. I might have discovered something that's very important and may need dedicated resources to see if it's actually accurate. And they were very interested. I explained to them and every few days I would update Meadows. I had his cell and his email. And then Stephen Hahn, the commissioner of the FDA, called me on my cell. I told him basically the same thing. And he got me in contact with the top people at the NIH. And there I hit a brick wall for two reasons. NIH was not interested, number one. Number two, they had no way of processing real-world evidence. I was not doing research. This wasn't a clinical trial. This was battlefield medicine, trying to keep my patients alive when there's no known treatment. There's a big difference there. But that is called real-world evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And real-world evidence in certain contexts has a tremendous amount of importance. But the NIH did not recognize it or see it that way. But then a week later, Rudy Giuliani called me, and I did a podcast with him, and that went viral, and my life has never been the same since.
Wow.
And I sent a letter to the president giving him an update of my data, and I wasn't sure if the president got the letter or not until he makes an announcement on that international media that he's taking hydroxychloroquine. Remember that?
Yes.
And then he said, I got a letter from an upstate New York doctor sharing with me his experiences, and he didn't even want to come to the White House and meet me. So, So that's how I found out that President Trump got my letter.
Yeah.
Everyone else. But then the vilification started, and all the suppression of hydroxychloroquine and anyone who was advocating for its use. And it's basically very simple. We were over target. We had the right answer. And the people, the stakeholders that did not want the right answer out there, started shooting at everything that might threaten their agenda.
Why? I mean, we're talking the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, people who said, you know, they've been working feverishly night and day to find a cure for this, and you've come across this. Why are they shooting you down?
I just told you, as of today, the NIH still tells you not to treat COVID unless you're in the hospital dying. So, or I can go through and question and prove to you how these agencies cannot be trusted and that there's no firewall between them and the pharmaceutical industry that pays for most of their budget. And the last two commissioners of the FDA, Scott Gottlieb, I believe, works for Pfizer, and Stephen Hahn works for Moderna, or vice versa, I forget. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the last two commissioners are now have high positions in the pharmaceutical industry, and there's no firewall. So how do you expect objective analyses of data when the people that are financing the research and are giving you future opportunities to work for them are the ones that are, you know, there? And so there's obviously conflicts of interest. I could tell you one thing, that when the FDA rescinded its emergency use authorization for the use of hydroxychloroquine, they had up a document that explained the rationale. And in this document, they quote a paper from Lancet, which was a meta-analysis of 96,000 patients that hydroxychloroquine killed people. The only problem with that paper was that it was fraudulent. And it was proven to be fraudulent. And Lancet, in the biggest scandal in the history of medicine, had to retract that paper for fraud. And a month later, the FDA uses this paper, which was proven to be fraud, as a basis to revoke the emergency use authorization.
Aye.
So they used a fraudulent document to take away access to life-saving medication. Or how about this? How about President Trump issues an order that hydroxychloroquine become available to every American? And this order goes to Secretary Azar, then it goes to Larry Kudlow, their liaison, and then it gets to Dr. Rick Bright, who work for the CDC, the division of BARDA. They do weapons research, they do vaccine research. And this information I know because Stephen Bright, Rick Bright, he did a documentary where he explains everything that he did in his own words. And the reason why I know about this documentary is because I was in the documentary right after his segment. So what does he say? He says that he got the order from President Trump by way of Larry Kudlow. He completely disagreed with that order, and so did his team in BARDA. So they came up with a creative solution. They were supposed to use the right to try legislation. They were supposed to use the mechanism in place in this government that allows for access to medications, government stockpile of medications under certain circumstances to people under emergency measures. That was the mechanism in place that Rick Bright was supposed to use. Instead, he smirks and says, we found a creative solution how to limit and restrict hydroxychloroquine usage by issuing an emergency use authorization for only hospitalized patients. So what that did was it effectively limited the national stockpile to only hospitalized patients and created a perception that hydroxychloroquine cannot be used in the outpatient setting. Mm-hmm. Even I bought into it. And what happened was then the employers made, because most doctors are employed by bigger systems, made moratoriums on the use of hydroxychloroquine, effectively shutting down its use in the United States of America and in the world because the rest of the world follows what the FDA does. So this is the mechanism of genocide. Because in retrospect, if you look at it, I was telling people, I'm seeing an 85%, 84% reduction in hospitalization and death. That observation initially has been corroborated by dozens of papers. And this Rick Bright is actively admitting, smirking, that he created an obstacle for the use of hydroxychloroquine. Subsequently, he got fired. And this is the deep state sabotage of President Trump, of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And now, guess where he works now? For the Rockefeller Foundation.
Oh, my.
So you can draw your own conclusions, but what I believe we're witnessing is the primordial serpent incarnate. We're witnessing a level of malevolence and malfeasance by a small group of people that are trying to enslave humanity, the soul of humanity, and micromanage the details of the lives of those people that survived their purge. Because there is a purge going on here. This vaccine will essentially eliminate the vulnerable, the weak, the old, sterilize another proportion of people, and those people that do survive this onslaught will be more robust in the minds of these people.
And the dream of Bill Gates becomes reality. We're up against a quick break. Friends, let me just suggest we've got more information to unpack, information here today. Make sure that you jot down this our web address here at Crosstalk and send the link out to others. You can also obtain a CD copy of our program today by calling 800-729-9829. Our guest has actually developed something called a Z-Stack. We'll tell you more about that after the break. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. My friends, there is a global convergence happening. And you know what? It reveals the supernatural nature of God's Word and where we are on God's prophetic calendar. Look at all the things the Bible says are going to occur. And guess what? They're occurring right now. Number one, a one-world economy. They're working on that. They're laying the foundation for the mark of the beast. Two, three, the Middle East conflict with Israel and the Gog-Magog scenario being set up, with Syria having right in their borders Iran, Russia, China, and Turkey. Four, they're talking about dividing the world into 10 unions. Five, the rise of hatred of Christians and Jews, anti-Semitism. Six, a one-world religious system that's being set up, the desire for a one-world government. Seven, eight, UFOs. You know, the Bible speaks about mysterious things happening in the skies, and it can be used as a cover for the removal of Christians. Nine, globalism. 10, financial collapse. 11, rebuilding the temple. And 12, apostasy. The stage is set for the last days.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko with us. He is one whom President Trump was a recipient of his research and actually his call out to God. Give me an answer. I need help. I need guidance on this. And much more to unpack here. I want to get a few things out. President Biden has spoken about the necessity of mandating this vaccine to protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. We've heard that now from Kamala Harris, who has tweeted that out as well, that we're committed to do this. We've got to protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. That seems, I mean, isn't this COVID shot working? I mean, why would they force this shot to protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated?
Well, this is an attempt to hurt a lot of people. You know, in good societies, parents will sacrifice everything for the benefit of their children. We want that our children have better lives than we did. That's a normal, I believe, good mentality. In evil societies, they sacrifice children for the good of the adults. And, you know, if they were so worried about grandma getting sick, so didn't you just vaccinate grandma? How is a healthy child a threat to grandma? So this has there's no medical necessity here. This is about using coercion and psychological warfare to isolate people, to create a fear narrative, and then use that to manipulate behavior into tagging the entire human race with a digital identifier, as the new patent proves, and basically reducing the world population. You know, in 2015, like I mentioned earlier, Gates said that the world population needs to be reduced. The same sociopath in 2020 said that 7 billion people need to be immunized. So let me ask you a simple question. Why would I take a vaccine for my health that's advocated and financed for by someone who wants to reduce the world population?
Let me just run a couple. We've got just a few minutes. I want to run a couple other things by you, and we're going to talk about your Z-Stack here in a moment. But I want to ask you about this Novavax COVID vaccine scheduled to be released in some countries around the world within a few months. It's non-mRNA, more of a traditional vaccine, protein-based. Would this be something that is safe for people to take where it's put out in places around the world, or is it going to have the same kind of side effects as the mRNA vaccine?
Well, no, it's not an mRNA vaccine, but it does have the same lipid nanoparticle technology. And who knows what that actually means. And I don't even know what the other ingredients are.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's historically, it's 7 to 10 years to develop a vaccine, test it, and bring it to market. That's the precedent. That's how long it takes to get accurate data. All this stuff is being pushed out with cutting corners. And I couldn't understand that. And someone wants to take the risk after getting informed consent, that's their prerogative. However, the Geneva Convention prohibits human experimentation without informed consent on people, and this is exactly what we're doing. So I don't know about the Novavax, but it would be like a wait-and-see approach, and whoever wants to be part of the experiment, let them be part of the experiment.
So tell us about Z-Stack.
So in April of 2020, the ghoul, ex-Governor Cuomo, issued an executive order blocking access to hydroxychloroquine to my patients. And it was my patients because I was the only one in the state doing it. Pharmacies were not dispensing it. So I had to find an alternative zinc delivery system. So I had to innovate again. And they say necessity is the mother of all innovation. And on the NIH servers, I found something called quercetin together with vitamin C that functions as a zinc delivery system. I honestly didn't know what quercetin was, so I Googled it. Well, I still use Google, and I saw that it was over the counter. So it was one of those aha moments of my life, because I kind of leaned back and I said, you know, I just found the cure to tyranny, because there's two risk factors to die from COVID: the moronic doctor who delays your care, and your tyrannical government that blocks access to life-saving medication. So, but here I can say, listen, go to the vitamin shop, buy quercetin, buy vitamin C, D, and zinc, and you'll do much better. And then the problem happened. Patients started calling me that we can't find it. We can't source it. We can't get the right dose. We can't find it all in one place. Can I put it in one bottle and make it simpler for people? Right. So because I had open sourced all this information, I didn't want to monetize anything. I just wanted people to know it. But there were logistical problems in getting it, and some people just can't put a puzzle together. So I did. I put the puzzle together for people. in the right dosing, made sure that it's the highest level of manufacturing, and I have this product. Now, according to the FDA, all I could tell you is the following. It's a nutritional supplement and an immune booster, but it contains the following: quercetin and vitamin C, which, according to NIH papers, peer-reviewed papers, functions as a zinc delivery system. It has zinc, which inhibits RNA-dependent RNA polymerase, which is the enzyme that COVID-19, all the strains, by the way, of COVID-19 need to replicate. And it has vitamin D3, which all the papers have shown that high normal levels between 50 and 70 of vitamin D3 prevents ICU admissions. Virtually anyone with high normal levels stays out of the ICU. So it's protected. The immune system gets optimized. So those four components are in the right dosing, in my opinion, in this product, which, according to the FDA, I can just tell you, is a nutritional supplement and an immune booster, which they are, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And if people want more information on that, how can they obtain it?
ZStackLife.com. ZStackLife.com.
And what are you saying to those who've already received the shot? We've got just a minute left.
You don't have to die. Follow King David's prescription. Stay away from bad, do good, and live. Stay away from bad. Don't take another poison death shot. If you have bombs inside you, don't create more. Don't live in fear. Don't live in isolation. And then take prophylaxis, because the trigger for your bombs is another viral infection. So if you take preventative therapy, you can mitigate the risk of getting another viral infection. Or if you do get sick, start treatment right away, and then you should be okay, I hope.
We have half a minute. What would you like to leave with our listeners today, Doctor?
This is a war against God, and anxiety lives in the psychological space where God is absent. Fill that void with faith, and you will survive this.
Yeah, yeah. God has not given us a spirit of fear, Scripture says, but a power and of love and of a sound mind. Dr. Zelenko, thank you so much for carving out such an important time to be with us here on the program today.
God bless you.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And again, folks, I apologize we didn't have time for calls. We had really committed to get out as much information as we could for you here today. And so much information, you're going to want to go back and listen. It will be archived on our site within just a couple hours. And you can go back, share the link with others, crosstalkamerica.com. That's crosstalkamerica.com. Or if you'd like to obtain a CD copy, but we do have duplicating and postage expense, a donation of $6 by calling us at 800-729-9829. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.